Warmest greetings to anyone listening to this conversation this morning. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in growth and transformation for decades. And during that long and wonderful journey, I've had the occasion to meet and work with a number of really outstanding teachers. I'm with one of them this morning, my dear friend, Jim Hamilton. A highly literate, highly competent human being who's written 5 books, but more importantly, he's come up with several protocols that have been proven time and time again to support any person looking to make a conscious change in their lives. You and I have talked, Jim, a number of times about a concept that I don't think gets a lot of attention generally, even among, bright people, and that's exponential multipliers. Would you define that for our audience this morning?
Rob, first thing, great to be here this morning. Always a pleasure to have conversation, and I enjoy the idea of people listening in on our conversations. And of course, being recorded, they'll be available for quite some time. So exponential multipliers is a term of my own, and somehow my work is grounded in the idea that the way we turn things around is exponential multipliers. We'll talk about the map of consciousness and the Maharishi effect in a bit, but the assumption that we vote and that 51% of the population or 55% or 72%, and actually a lot of your voting is, it's 54% to 48 or, some kind of numbers like that. And there's nothing definitive about that. And we continue to go on as a species, kind of half against, half for, and generally most of that is a reflection of personal interests, how to keep the taxes low and make more money personally, or and on and on. And exponential multipliers is actually about grounding the frequency of God into the world. Now, it's curious because God is already grounded into the entire world. All you have to do is look at nature. And when I use the term God, I am starting to identify God as a type of governance, a type of order. The idea that it's a two-legged is a really very outdated idea as far as God. But governance is an order that everything shares. And somehow the humans are out of sync with it. And being out of sync with it, we're dysfunctional as hell as a species. And my belief is that the way we get the human species back on track is to learn how to plug into source. When we plug into source, we become exponential, which we'll talk about. And I don't believe there's any other sort of solution for humans becoming part of the growth of what the planet has to offer and all the excitement of being alive. Right now, we're just milling around and fighting with each other ourselves. So we got to learn how to do it differently. Exponential multipliers is that ultimate end result.
Well, you just defined exponential multipliers for the audience, but you also gave 3 very important examples. Would you comment on the map of consciousness and how that fits into your thinking about exponential multipliers?
Well, we've touched on the map of consciousness by Dr. David Hawkins a number of times in these series of conversations we've had. And the map of consciousness is a really powerful identifier of possibility. The map of consciousness was first published in Dr. David Hawkins' first, I'll say modern book, because he wrote Orthomolecular Psychiatry with Linus Pauling, which is about introducing nutrition to psychiatry of all things. But he wrote Power versus Force. And I think I get my dates mixed up. That book, I don't think it's 1992, maybe. So it's my first book was 2003, and I thought they were more closely aligned as far as publishing dates. But in Power Versus Force, he introduced the map of consciousness, and it's a scale of 0 to 1,000, 0 to under 200 of the states of apathy, fear, grief, anxiety, rage, whatever, up through pride at 175. 200 is labeled courage on the map. And from courage, you start moving into allowing, because these lower states are really variations of resistance and rigidity and overload and reaction and all those lower states of unconsciousness, you might say, unconscious to the world, and so wrapped up on our own stuff that all we do is fight. And so courage is the breakpoint on the map. We start moving into reason, and let's see the list here actually. Neutrality, willingness, acceptance, reason, love, joy, peace, enlightenment. And what that really means is as you move up the map, you move away from resistance and into more allowing. And what's important about that concept is that as you move into more allowing, i.e., you move away from resistance, as you move into more allowing, you naturally blend with source. Because resistance and mind time and resistance, in my opinion, are the same. So when you move out of the mind, move away from the mind, move away from the limitations of the mind, blending with source is naturally what happens. And as you become blended with source, you move beyond this re resistance and rigidity, and you become exponential. To the point that one person at 700 on the map counterbalances the negativity of 70 million people below 200. So what I'm saying is, as we move into more and more and more allowing, which becomes a mindless thing as we come to understand it, as we become blended with source, which is to say, we become partnered with source, we walk around on this planet with two legs, with innate intelligence streaming out of our eyes, we become massively exponential to the point that one person at 700 counterbalances a negativity of 70 million people. One person at 600 counterbalances a negativity of 10 million people. One person at 500 counterbalances a negativity of 750,000. That's what I mean by exponential multipliers. The fun
Is
part,
there?
wait, so let me add. The fun part is when we move into this potential, what I want to say is we move into this action of carrying that much horsepower for contribution. The important thing is we are no longer in our mind. You can't be in your mind like we think about driving down the street and sending blessings to people walking on the sidewalk. We move into a whole different status of living and being, and we are not in our mind. And that's the safety of having innate intelligence expressing through you, because you're no longer in charge in the old-fashioned way. It's actually an important distinction. So I just wanted to touch on that.
Is there a place or places on your website where someone listening today could go to explore a little bit more the details of the map of consciousness?
Well, there's two things that come to mind. One is a new set of sites or set of pages. It's called visionarieslab.com. So you can go vision www.visionaries, VISIONARIES lab.com. And that'll take you into something that's pretty recent. And the map of consciousness is identified in there. But more direct in my website would be coreresonance.com/map of consciousness with hyphens, map of consciousness hyphen two. So all the words map of consciousness two have hyphens, and there's a more direct insight into understanding the map of consciousness and the exponential multipliers. As we move out of the mind and plug into source, we become exponential. And as we learn to harness this, it's huge. just huge. I also get the ride of a lifetime, as I like to say.
Thanks for sharing those details about the map of consciousness. And even more importantly, Jim, your work to a substantial degree is designed to support people who want to move up that map and experience those higher states that you describe, and by so doing, position themselves to be able to contribute vastly, you know, to the current dilemma on the planet. So would you share a bit with us, you know, how your work supports people in doing what I just described?
It occurs to me that vastly and bigly are different. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, the hair stands up my arm as I start to remark about this. I've never, this won't sound right, but I've never believed in voting. I don't vote because I won't sign a voter's registration. You're signing things under penalties of perjury, and it's best you understand what you sign. And at the same time, so I won't sign a voter's registration. And voting is almost, I won't tell people not to vote. That's not my point. But I believe in grassroots change rather than, I'll just say that. I believe in grassroots change. And grassroots change is a product of teaching people about their nature. And so it is, they step into their personal power, they make better choices. And that's what's been going on, not only since the 1950s when we had, you know, we barely had black and white TV in the 50s, and look how far we've come. But you go back to the 1600s and personal power, it's so much more available to people than it ever was. And so my work is about tools for stepping into your power. And because I started out as a meditator, and before that, you know, learning how to harness the subconscious mind and goal setting and all that. And of course, I was retired by 30 with a 40-foot sailboat. And I've told us, made the remark many times now. But so the way I've come up and ended up with a lifetime of meditation, and I've got almost 50 years now, even though I don't meditate as much as I went an easy 35 years without missing a beat. Then I got into neurofeedback and now core resonance. I think that was 37 years when I was introduced to neurofeedback. And so having had a lifetime of meditation or the equivalent of that, I know what that can achieve, and it can achieve a massive amount, and it's not enough. So we need exponential multipliers. We need new tools. And somehow I am driven to participate in the world by teaching access to personal power at all new scales of order. And for the most part, it's a product of moving out of the mind. So my tools are about learning how to move out of the mind, doing what meditation can do, do it in a more quickly. And again, as I said earlier, if you can't have a lot of power from God, if you will, and still be in your mind, they're counter to each other. And so my tools, whether it be core resonance, which is really kind of a high-end concept, or soaring affirmations and prosperity and guidance light, which is a little more readily attainable by people. And I've got some technologies I've really never really unleashed to any great degree. And so anyway, I hope all that time is coming up as I build an audience and we build an audience and people start asking questions. And I can tell you that people more than ever have a concern about, like, we know when we had COVID for 3 years, the oceans went quiet and the whales got a break. You know, we all know that. We all know that the atmosphere got a break during COVID. And so we've seen how readily that can recover. So my audience and the tools I have are for people that are interested in making a difference and looking for how do you do it. Voting is one way. I say vote, but don't count on that. Don't count on that.
Share with our audience just a bit more about your mind-based program, so they get some sense of how that works.
I'm glad you used the term mind-based because yes, I've divided my technologies into mind-based and nervous system-based because nervous system is your center. We learn how to quiet the nervous system, the brain being the single biggest part of the nervous system. Quiet the nervous system, your connection with source becomes enabled. That's really my star technology, but it is a bit on the fancy side. Costs a bit of a chunk of change. It's not that much money. And so what I've done is I've circled back to my origins, which is around the idea of affirmations and learning how to first ascertain what a good affirmation looks and sounds like. And so I'll go through this really quick. There's about four variations on affirmations. One would be, believe it or not, when you're in a fight with somebody or you're in resistance, that's a type of affirmation. Because it's what you're putting out. It's what you're broadcasting. And your broadcast and an affirmation and your prayer, because what you put out is your prayer, because we're putting a signal out. And so when we're in consternation or rage or anger or this or that, that is a type of affirmation because it's a signal that we're putting out into the universe for which we get more of that back. And I think it's hard to be at that bottom level and eventually, people go, there's got to be more. And so they start. I think that's where courage shows up. But to answer your question, I'm really featuring Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light right now. It's a very powerful tool. I created it about the time I wrote Visionaries Thrive in All Times. In fact, the tool in its early forms were what I used to keep Visionaries Thrive in All Times. The whole project was 3 years and 9 months. I think the book or the manuscript was 25 months, and that was all unexpected. I'm writing at 4:30 in the morning. I journaled for 2 years before I started that book. You don't go to work every day and come home and write. My writing was very in kind of intense isn't the word, very pleasurable, but very time consuming. I didn't seem to be dating when I was writing. It was a one-on thing. And what became Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light was what I was practicing. About the time I finished Visionaries Thrive in All Times and introduced it in 2003 or 2005, February 2005, I had developed this program and I did it once it was developed. I did it every 3 years. So I did it in 2004, 2005, mostly 2005. I did it again in 2008. 2011, 2016. I did it recently. It's 100 days long. What we're doing, okay, so you have different kinds of affirmations. The worst kind of affirmation is when you're in rage or depression, because again, your signal going out of you, what you're talking to the universe is very low quality. From there, you go into an affirmation of choosing what you want based on what you don't want. So you're sending out a mixed signal. And a mixed signal is going to give you mixed results because truly what you broadcast is how you create your realities, is where a law of attraction comes from, how all that works. Now, one of the ways to protect or create, upgrade what having what you want, choosing what you want based on what you don't want is move to how you want to feel. But from there, so you got first grade, you got second grade, and then third grade is where your affirmation is about your connection with source. Now, most people don't really understand this or they don't practice it, but your possibilities, the truest affirmations about your connection, instead of what you want, What you really want to do is enable your natural state of connection with source. And in doing so, then your life unfolds beyond your own comprehension and beyond your own values. Now, the only thing that's fancier than that is what are called soaring affirmations, where we do exercises. This is what I teach. It's a self-study course with support. And we start with affirmations based on our connection with source. We meditate on these, and then we rewrite. So we write this stuff. We do it every day. We write these affirmations. We meditate on them. And then we do a version called soaring affirmations, where what comes out of us is a very evolved version of the affirmation about your connection with source. I'll kind of leave it at that, except to say that soaring affirmations, it's astounding to go back later and discover what's inside of you that you didn't know was there. And now your prayer, your broadcast, your affirmation, your law of attraction focus has become very, very, very clear. And so now what we're doing is we're using the mind at its highest possibility. And because your broadcast has become crystal clear, the universe responds in like kind, and all of a sudden the magic shows up. That's called soaring affirmations, prosperity and guidance light. It's presently $600. You can do it in 3 payments. It's got 100% money back guarantee. I get on a call once a week with people that are doing this, and 100% money back guarantee is interesting. You have to do the lessons, but it's actually quite an offering to people. It will change your life, and learning how to plug into what's true, it's the biggest game in town. Then we become exponential. Guidance light, you're not going to get it any other place, I don't believe. I mean, we all have access to guidance, but we can really bump it up.
What if an audience member is having that experience you're fond of describing, with the hair standing up on the back of their neck right now? Be specific about the steps they need to take to sign up and get started.
Well, so you can go to coreresonance.com/soaring affirmations with a hyphen between soaring and affirmations. That'll take you direct to the instructions set in the introduction to soaring affirmations. The other place to go would be visionarieslab.com, because the whole Visionaries Lab world is about mind-based technology. And so there's a remark in there about what's called first function in the mind, because our first function is our connection with source. And we need to understand that we're not whole or complete on our own, and enabling this connection, like all the animals and the trees and the bumblebees, they already have this intact connection. So soaring affirmations, I think even think soaringaffirmations.com would forward to coreresonance.com/soaringaffirmations with a hyphen. So, and of course, the other best thing is to contact me. Go to the website, coreresonance.com/contact, and make an appointment to talk with me on Zoom, and talk to anybody for a half hour.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever is appropriate to the person I'm speaking to who is listening to this conversation today. My name is Rob Christie. I've been involved in growth and transformation for decades. During that journey, I've had the privilege of working with a number of top teachers, and I'm with one of them this morning. He's my dear friend, Jim Hamilton. He's the author of 5 books, and even more importantly than that, he's perfected several technologies that have been proven time and time again to support any person interested in moving up the map of consciousness and improving their life circumstances. Earlier today, we were talking about the concept of exponential multipliers, those wonderful creations that have the possibility of impacting people in the world many, many times what you might think. And one of those exponential multipliers is known as the Maharishi effect. So, Jim, would you share your thoughts about that with our audience?
Well, Rob, again, great to be here. I always like our conversations. You always bring a spin on our stuff that delivers more, not only for me, but for everybody. The Maharishi effect is a very, very, very special concept. And I would say for the most part, it is unknown. And maybe people know who Maharishi Mahesh Yogi is, was. I don't know what year he passed, but he was the guru that the Beatles discovered in the 60s. And he... You know, all those gurus, they've studied all these ancient teachings and this and that, and they, of course, they come in plugged in some manner. But what Maharishi did that was so very special, and the way I see it, was he introduced meditation to the Western world as a technique, TM, or transcendental meditation, for one reason, I believe. And that was to introduce that when you have a portion of a population meditating in a locale, it influences that locale. Now that became, I don't know what he called it. He certainly didn't call it the Maharishi effect, because that's kind of a generic term. But what he did was introduce meditation so that he could demonstrate that when 1% of a population is meditating in a city or a locale, it will influence that locale. Now, they did demonstrations for 30 years, and it was very common to invite criminologists, sociologists, academics, anybody interested. And of course, they worked with a lot of meditators. But what they did was they would set up demonstrations and measure the cumulative effect of meditators on crime and violence and this and that. There's one particular case from 1993 where 4,000 experienced meditators, and I make the point that they're experienced meditators. It's not like pulling people off park benches and telling them to come sit over here for a while and hum together. When I use the word hum, I'm kind of teasing. I can tease about my own world. But what they did was, Washington, D.C. was like crime capital of the world. It's hard to believe the seat of the United States government, that right outside the door, rape and mayhem and murder and all this kind of stuff was at the incredible rate that it was. And so they chose, in fact, they actually had some kind of a facility in DC. But anyway, what they did was they brought in 4,000 experienced meditators, which is what was 1% of the population at the time. It was approximately 400,000 people in DC at the time. They invited criminologists, sociologists, academics, and on and on. They explained what they were going to do. They explained how they were going to do it, what they expected to see, how they were going to score it, how they were going to allow for weather and humidity. And, you know, in the summertime, people get a little more riled up when it's hot. And the long story short was that crime dropped 23.3% in the seventh week because the meditators showed up over a seven-week period. And in the seventh week, the most meditators were there, and crime dropped 23.3%. I'm reminded And I actually talked to one of the gentlemen that was part of this study. This was a number of years ago. I don't remember who it was. I actually got a hold of somebody because I was curious whether automobile accidents dropped at the same rate because crime. So, in other words, you have dissonance and you have order. And dissonance looks like so many different kinds of things. I mean, it's people arguing between themselves. It's war. It's people stealing from each other. Dissonance is disorder is just disorder. And whether you call it murder or people cheating on their whatever, it's kind of all the same. And when you ground the frequency of God into the world, which I'll explain in a minute, dissonance dissipates and order naturally takes its place. Now, the important thing about the Maharishi effect, and I discovered this on my own, is that when people meditate, experienced meditators meditate, they become empty. And what empty means is they move out of their mind. And mind's an important concept because mind is not, most of us, we got minds, we think they're cool, but the mind is not anywhere near as fancy a tool as we think. And when you learn how to put the mind aside in meditation, the whole thing opens up because mind is really kind of a block to your connection with source. My point being, when you have 4,000 meditators meditating, which is to say they've moved out of their mind, and when you move out of your mind, it's like a butterfly valve opens, like a valve opens. And so normally the mind is intact. You have this resistance because mind time and resistance are synonymous, in my opinion. And when you're in your mind, you've got a blockage between you and your connection with source. When you're in your mind, you move out of the mind. It's like the butterfly valve opens and the frequency of God pours through you. And as I like to say, the frequency of God peaks out of 4,000 nervous systems, coalesces as coherence, and coherence dissipates distortion. That's how the Maharishi effect works. I didn't read that anywhere. I've discovered that through my experimentation research with core resonance, which is a fancy way to do the Maharishi effect, different subject or but the point is that when you meditate, you become empty. Meditation is a variation on allowing. The more allowing you are, the less you're in your mind, the less you're in your mind, the more innate intelligence leaks through you or expresses through you. That's how the exponential multipliers show up. So the Maharishi effect is a very interesting concept. I don't think there's really probably anything more interesting on the planet than the Maharishi effect because as we learn how to meditate together or move out of our minds as a collective, the frequency of God peaks out of our nervous system, coalesces as coherence. Coherence dissipates distortion. And as distortion disappears, we move into a coherent world. And that is not, you're not going to vote and get that. So partnering with the frequency of God is the bottom line. We need our nervous system is our center for that. Our nervous system is like a living antenna system. The mind gets in the way because it blocks incoming information. That's another subject a little bit, but we move out of the mind, this connection becomes enabled, and coherence reigns. And coherence is a type of governance. And while people might think that coherence would be, kind of a benign existence, actually, life starts to get exciting when you have that kind of order in your life. There's whole other realms to explore. So many more to explore beyond this low octave of dissonance and disorder. There's so much more.
Well, thanks, Jim, for that eloquent description of the Maharishi effect. Want to share with our audience, although it was not my first introduction to meditation, I found myself living in Ohio roughly a decade ago, and I had gotten away from the discipline of meditating on a regular basis, I guess. So I decided to learn TM, which is the technique that Maharishi introduced to the West. And the reason I'm sharing it this morning, the organization is still intact. This is what Jim is describing to us is not the Maharishi effect is not the only contribution this man made. The organization he created exists to this day. I was able to contact the organization when I lived in Cleveland, Ohio. And when I moved to California, just south of LA, I was able to recontact the organization here. And I mention those two things because I think if you are trying to install any discipline in your life, it's been proven time and time again that if you do it with a partner or do it in community, you've got a much better chance at sustaining the practice over time. And, you know, if you're curious, just go online and Google TM in my community, and you'll find the organization that's closest to you. In addition to the Maharishi effect, Jim, when we were discussing the general topic of exponential multipliers, although it's not a precise fit, you mentioned something very intriguing. And that was an article that you'd come in contact with called "Are Inventions Inevitable?" which kind of speaks to the same subject. And perhaps you'd like to comment on that for our audience this morning.
Sure. So actually, Core Resonance, which is my overall project, it's a three-legged stool, or has three tenets. The Maharishi effect is a very powerful concept. The map of consciousness by Dr. David Hawkins is another very powerful concept. And I found this article on my own somehow, living a magical life like I do, all the research that Core Resonance has become and represents. And the article's title, Inventions Inevitable, A Note on Social Evolution. I think that's the subtitle, A Note on Social Evolution. It was written in 1922 by two Columbia University professors. And what they did was they looked at 400 years of prior history. And I guess that takes you back to the 1600s. And what they discovered, and I think this is what they were looking for, was inventions and discoveries and processes that were discovered by multiple parties simultaneously. Because human beings, I like to say our nervous system is our center. We are receivers. In fact, if you think about it, when you look out through your eyes, you're actually sensing out through a wavelength of information that the eyes sense with. And your ears sense out. You don't really, you know, you hear, but you sense out. Like I can be talking to you and I can listen to see what I can hear through the window at the same time. And so we sense out through our senses and we receive back. And it's this sensing out. In fact, all animals do it. You look at a little paramecium or something little in a petri dish, and they're bouncing off the walls of the dish, and they're moving about, and they're looking for food or whatever it is they're doing, but they're sensing out and receiving back at a very fundamental level. And the point is, sensing out and receiving back is really what we do, and we are just a fancy mechanism for that same thing. And as I like to point out, the nervous system, I'm going to get fancy here for a second. The nervous system is made out of neurons. Neurons have quite a few. All neurons have microtubules, and microtubules is the connection. All cells have microtubules, and a microtubule is like the little receiving dish that a cell has so that it gets its governance from God, or from the frequency of God, or innate intelligence, from the cosmos. And so all cells have a receiving portal, a little loading dock for receiving information for the governance of the cell. I say the nervous system is the center. It's made out of neurons, and neurons have far more microtubules, which actually I only learned this a few years ago. But as an early meditator, I realized after 5 or 6 years of meditating that as you quiet down, it turns out you're learning how to listen. You're learning how to sense with your nervous system. That's how this whole thing opened up for me. The idea of your nervous system is a living antenna system. The brain is part of the nervous system. The brain's on overload. So you got a lot of racket and noise in a nervous system that otherwise senses at a very subtle level. Well, what these psychologists did at Columbia University and wrote this paper in 1922 was to discover and identify that human beings receive their insights from the cosmos, to the point that probably all inventions and all discoveries and all processes are a product of intuitive this or that, and otherwise waking up in the middle of the night with insights. Or even Thomas Edison, I think it was, would have a problem and he would take a nap with two ball bearings in his hand. And as soon as he'd fall asleep, the ball bearings would slip out of his hands. He'd wake up, he'd have the insight he was looking for, and he received it. We assume that we process, and our brain processes information, and the mind processes, and we build our own solutions internally. We don't, we receive them. And what the Our Inventions Inevitable article identified is that, I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but I don't have them even close, I don't think. 5 or 6 people invented the steamboat at the same time. 2 people invented typewriters across the Atlantic from each other simultaneously. I think 2 people with the telegraph, they went to the patent office on the same day, unbeknownst to each other, to patent the telegraph. I don't think it was the telephone. Might have been the telephone. Calculus was invented by multiple parties simultaneously. Sunspots were discovered by multiple parties, and this is to say documented. So this is in documented history. Looking back 400 years from 1922, you could see that 4 people independently identified sunspots inside the same year. And they had no knowledge of each other. There was no such thing as internet or long distance or cell phones or anything like that. And you look at history in the, you know, present time, looking at history, and you can see all the different inventions and discoveries that came in at the same time, and multiple people documented it as their own. Telescope was invented by multiple parties simultaneously. Thermometers. A great example is airplanes were invented by 2 people simultaneously, or 2 parties simultaneously, unbeknownst to each other. Samuel Pierpont Langley, for which Langley Air Force Base is named. He was part of the Smithsonian. I can't tell you what year. We can find out when Orville and Wilbur Wright first flew their airplane, because it's the exact same time that Langley was using some kind of a sled thing and flying over the Potomac. I think I remember that from when I was in elementary school or high school or whatever it was. And he initially got credit for the first heavier-than-air aircraft, or the first heavier-than-air flying machine. And it turned out, with documentation, and it was in his lifetime, that the Wright brothers, only 250 miles away, because they flew in, I forget where they were, what beach they were
was
on.
Was it Kitty Hawk, North Carolina? Was
Thank
that
you.
It?
That's right. But their actual offices, and they were bicycle builders, and their activities were actually in Akron, North Carolina, Akron, Ohio. But they came to Kitty Hawk to do their flying. So it was not, they were always down the street from Langley and the Smithsonian and DC and the Potomac. But it turned out that independently of each other, no knowledge of each other, They both were doing the same thing. And what that identifies to me so very powerfully is that humans are receivers. We sense out and we receive back. Some people are more high sensitivity. Some people are in more overload. The sensitivity, the insight comes in and it's gone in a second. Other people, like myself, I'm really big on documenting insights. I wake up in the middle of the night, I've got a recorder by the bed, a digital recorder. I generally transcribe all that stuff. Nowadays, I have software that transcribes it, and I collect what comes in. All my writing, actually, when all the different books, all the different things I've done, that insight comes in while I write. In fact, I trap the cosmos on paper. And my point is that the humans are receivers. Our connection with source is more real than we have any earthly idea. There's an order that everything shares. As we learn how to plug into it, not only do we become true to ourselves, but we extend the knowledge of the species. Now, that's in comparison to learning how to rob banks better or steal from each other or greed and the lower version of things. There's this altruistic component of humanity. And so through this article, Are Inventions Inevitable, which, by the way, can be found at coreresonance.com/inventions. It's quite the discovery to realize that in our history, multiple parties discover and invent and create processes at the same time because the information comes, it's like it's broadcast to the planet. I don't exactly know how to explain it other than say multiple parties pick up the insight basically in the exact same time frame, not the same day, but this, four people discovered sunspots in 1601 or 1604. One of them was Galileo, documenting what he discovered. And so it's important to recognize that quieting the nervous system, whether it be for the Maharishi effect or whatever, that as we quiet down, our communication with this overall governance that humans and actually all of nature abides by, we need to learn how to plug back into that. And I hope we'll talk about world peace in a bit. We'll go into another segment, but it's enabling our natural state of connection with source, becoming partnered with that, becoming blended with that, that the possibility of moving past all this angst, all this disorder, all this destruction, that the species out of connection with its source, out of order with itself, because we're powerful enough to wreck our existence on this little tiny planet.
Warmest greetings to the person listening to our conversation, wherever you may be today. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in growth and transformation for decades. I've had the privilege of working with many great teachers. I'm with one of them this morning. His name is Jim Hamilton. He's my dear friend. He's the author of five books. And even more important than those five great books, Jim's perfected a couple of technologies that have been proven to support any person who's looking to make meaningful change in his or her life. Before we got to this particular conversation this morning, Jim and I have been talking about a concept called exponential multipliers. In a nutshell, that's things that Jim's encountered that show the possibility to take something and multiply it exponentially for the benefit of humankind. And in the last segment, we talked about a wonderful article he had discovered that went back 400 years and showed invention after invention after invention that turned out having been invented simultaneously by one or more parties. What does that tell us? That tells us that the source for those inventions was not the individual process of one person, but acquiring the capacity to tune into the universe and get that signal that was out there and available for more than one person. And of course, that particular article centered on inventions. But isn't there more to say about what happens to a human being who succeeds in quieting his, her mind, and thus acquiring the ability to tune into those signals? What are the implications for that person's business, financial well-being, health, fitness, relationships, sex, and one's connection with God, source, however you care to describe that? And how does that land in your world?
Yeah, Rob, it's a good reflection. It's interesting. So what it really boils down to is humans, we think we're the end all be all. And, you know, we've got automobiles. You know, I drive a nice car. It's a pleasure to drive a nice car. There's so many things we have, and we make assumptions, I guess you might say, about our own self-importance. We can look at what we've done as a species. We can also look at the incredible damage we've done. But we're not whole on our own. Now, I'm going to give you, I'm going to go risky here and make a remark. There's a lot of people, and it's a fair remark, and I think ultimately it's not accurate because it's metaphorical. We talk about people being heart-centered, and they make assumption, and heart-centered is feeling-based, it's kindness-based, it's not mind-based, and I will admit mind is a poor tool, and so the alternative is traditionally heart-centered. But people then make the assumption that the heart, the physical heart, has something to do with heart-centered. And again, heart-centered is metaphorical, because when people talk about being heart-centered, that doesn't have a regard for the frequency of God. Heart-centered means, well, I'm heart-centered. And that still seems to suggest that you're on your own. Well, I'm heart-centered. And what I've come to see is that the nervous system is a center because it receives the frequency of God. It's sensing out and receiving back is what we do. Our ears have a 1-inch connection to the brain. Our eyes, the pathway between the information coming in through the eyes and sensing out, that's a 1-inch pathway. Touch or taste and smell, they're directly, the brain is the center for all of that sensing, for all the calculations of all that sensing. And my point is that heart-based is metaphorical, because what heart felt actually is the nervous system resonating in a certain manner, because the nervous system will tell you everything you need to know about whether something is true or not. Abraham Hicks talks about when you have a thought, or what you focus on expands, that not only do you want to put your mind in what you want to focus on, but you want to listen or feel for the feeling that's associated with thought, because the feeling is actually more information than the thought itself, but they go together. And so, and that's all nervous system driven. And so the more you are true to yourself, the more the nervous system quiets down, the more sensing the nervous system does. And that's how the whole thing opens up. And I'm not against mind, pardon me, heart-centered. I do believe it's metaphorical because it's actually the nervous system. And I know people have a hard time with this, but we have to realize that heart-centered does not have a reflection with how the cosmos, how we're part of the cosmos. Heart-centered usually has us still standing on our own. And that's the effort I'm trying to go to explain that we're not here on our own whatsoever. And the nervous system and the microtubules and the neurons and how this work is a mechanical understanding of our connection with source. And as a species, and there becomes more of us every generation, where we have more ability than ever before to have some free time to make meditation part of our day, to have the discipline to meditate every day. I used to, as a yacht broker, I used to probably meditate before I went to work every day. I don't really remember that so much, but it's when I used to meditate when I get out of the shower. So it always was. And then I would meditate at lunchtime, sit out in my car and meditate and recollect my centeredness for the second half of my day because I was on commission. But the point is, the humans have to learn how to quiet down internally. And in doing so, their natural state of connection with source becomes enabled. And what we've seen from the Maharishi effect is the more people plugged into source, the more they contribute to the overall whole of mankind. Because as we become coherent within, for which our connection shows up, we then become resonant without. So as we become coherent, we then become resonant with the world. And that's how we express out of us what we've learned how to devise, which is the collection of the frequency of God by sensing out and receiving it and having a refined and quieted nervous system so that that expresses through us with no distortion back out into the world. So we are a fancy mechanism for God expressing through us. That is the bottom line. And as we get into larger groups of humans that start operating like this, there becomes a collective consciousness or a collective expression. Like I say, the frequency of God peaking out of our nervous systems, coalescing as coherence, and coherence dissipating disorder. Because coherence is a type of governance. And so our nervous system is our center. It's the tool that we use to ground the frequency of God into the world. And as we come to understand that, we become exponential. And making a world of a better place is available. I don't know. I don't think there's any other way. I think that's it. Not because it's my idea, but you look at nature. Nature is very, a tree plugged into source, plugged into its connection. A tree is a receiver. It might produce apples and do different things, but it's very subject to the sun and the cycles it's a reflection of its surroundings. And we need to learn how to plug into that. And then we become true. The world becomes a better place. It's actually, I believe that's how it works.
Addressing our audience members this morning, as Jim has just done, perhaps you were drawn here today because you have a personal challenge. Might be in your career, might be in your financial affairs, might be in one of your relationships, might be in your health, might be in your fitness, or perhaps you were drawn here today because you've gotten to the point in your life where you want to make a difference. You can see what's happening in the world. And if you agree with us, you know, it's 11 o'clock and we got till midnight to turn this ship around. And what I've learned from Jim is it really doesn't matter which of those two people you are. The person drawn here because of a personal challenge, or a person drawn here because you want to make a difference. Because what I've learned from Jim is the answer is the same. There's only one road to take if you fall into either of those two categories. If you don't gain dominion over your mind and the capacity to relax and allow, nothing's going to work. Ultimately, there will still be challenges. You will still be scratching your head or wondering what to do next. Well, brothers and sisters, I got good news for you. The guy I'm talking to this morning has a couple of proven technologies he's prepared to share with you at what I regard as a bargain price that will allow you to relax, that will allow you to quiet your mind, that will allow you to receive that guidance without which, you know, nothing else makes sense. Jim, would you share with our audience a few things about those technologies and how they support people in gaining dominion over the mind, quieting the mind, and moving up the map of consciousness?
You know, it's interesting. Dominion over the mind is not to make you more powerful by having dominion over the mind. I mean, the discipline of meditation is very powerful, and maybe as powerful as the discipline of doing it is as powerful as the meditation itself. But you want discipline over the mind, because the more discipline you have over the mind, it becomes more available to let go of. That's what the discipline of the mind is about. It's not about getting everybody running on all 12 cylinders, all the different parts of your mind running on all 12 cylinders so you can be more efficient. As I promise you, the mind, once you learn to access presence, the mind, you'll see the mind ain't that fancy of a tool. It's linear. It's restricted to what it knows as it projects forward. It competes with intuition for the most part. And so letting go of the mind's a big game. Before I go on to what you're asking me, I would like to remark that I've touched on this. I think I was writing chapter 11 or 12 of Visionaries Thrive in All Times, and I came across a fact that interested me and surprised me. I was writing about precession of the equinox and this and that, and Egyptian and whatever. And what I came to realize is, first off, you've got the Ten Commandments as we know them now. I think they go back 2,500 years, real round numbers. I'm not a biblical person or even religious. But the Ten Commandments came from Moses. He went up on Mount somewhere, Mount Ararat, I don't know. Anyway, he went up on the mountain, Mount Sinai, I don't know. And he came down with the Ten Commandments. But what's interesting is that Moses was Egyptian. I think he came out of a basket in the reeds. This is, you know, Sunday school about a trillion years ago. But what's interesting about Egyptian knowledge is that the Book of the Dead, that was written by Thoth, supposedly, and I'm not, I don't know that much about that. I did have an attraction to Thoth at one time, and that's pretty old stuff. But the Book of the Dead, the older it is, the older the hieroglyphics, the higher the quality of the hieroglyphics. And my point is that the equivalent of the book, the equivalent of the Ten Commandments was always in the Book of the Dead. And so when Moses introduced the Ten Commandments, that's an earlier knowledge and an earlier set of rules. And the Book of the Dead goes back at least 8,000 years. And the first commandment, and yes, in the Book of the Dead, it was slightly different. But the first commandment is, thou shalt have no other gods before me. I'm not talking religious, and we need to move away from the religious version of that, but our attention and our focus needs to be on our connection with Source, first and foremost. And you'd be surprised how many people, their first and foremost connection is on money, except when it's April and they got to pay their taxes, and their connection is on the IRS or this or that. And we've lost so much sight of what's true. You know, the government is a type of governance, and the humans inadvertently started to use the word cower. I could do better than that. They hide under the skirts of the government because that's a type of governance, and they would rather do that than stand on their own and stand in their power. Because government properly only has authority over artificial entities. I need to dig into that a little bit. Government has authority over what it creates. It does not create human beings. Human beings should be looking to God for their governance. Corporations and LLCs and whatever should be looking to the state for their governance. And that's something to be looked at right there. But as the humans come to discover their nature and discover that their governance comes from their connection with Source, that's how we step into our power. And that's what I teach about. And Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light is a great example. And it's because not only did I develop it at a really powerful time, but I've continued to revise it. I continue to use it. Last July, it's 100 lessons. And you do a lesson every day. That's not to say that you'll do it in 100 days, because you miss days and this and that, and that's not a problem. But what you want to do is saturate your mind with a certain type of thinking. And when you saturate your mind with a certain type of thinking based on these affirmations and the Soaring Affirmation variation, that which I touched on earlier, you can simplify your broadcast and actually make your broadcast coherent. Because I don't care if you're raging at somebody or in deep meditation or deep peace or in, what's the term when you're sitting around and you got flowers around you and you're in the forest and you're in this state of profound peace, you're still broadcasting out. And when you broadcast out, of course, you get back what you get. So the higher quality your broadcast, the more your connection with Source becomes enabled. And of course, your reality creating cleans up based on the quality of your broadcast, which means your next bout of allowing becomes more available, because what you're broadcasting is creating your reality, which makes it easier to allow, which makes it easier to allow. And as your reality creating becomes easier to allow, you create realities that are more in sync, which become easy. And so allowing, and that's how it grows. So harnessing the mind is ultimately about letting the mind go, but we can use it very effectively. And we move into access to guidance light. And then from there, it's another step into pure guidance. So I do recommend the prosperity or Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light. But then there's Core Resonance, which is a really fancier tool for doing the same thing. It's a little bit more costly because it's meant to be owned and shared by six people in a graphically relatively, like inside of an organization, Core Resonance inside of a company. I call that Taproot by Core Resonance. What you do is you learn how to quiet the nervous system with neurofeedback. My neurofeedback is quite different from traditional neurofeedback. We learn how to let the brain discover itself through the hardware software. And as the brain discovers itself, kind of like a technology mirror, the brain cleans itself up. And as the brain cleans itself up, as it becomes more efficient, the brain quiets down. The brain quiets down as part of the nervous system, your connection with Source becomes enabled. And it's much easier for your connection with Source to become enabled when you quiet the nervous system. And by the way, when this connection is enabled by quieting the brain and the nervous system, the mind will relent to that connection, because normally the mind will not give itself up. It sees itself as a guard dog for brain on overload. And Taproot by Core Resonance in particular, when six people share the ownership of the equipment, You can rapidly bump up the map of consciousness because we can quell, we can dissipate the overload and the distortion in the brain, so the rigidity drops away and allowing grows. And as allowing grows, our connection with source is what we've been talking about. As allowing grows, we become blended with source. The more blended with source, the more innate intelligence leaks out of us, coalesces as coherence, and coherence dissipates distortion. But the point becomes, in this environment of six people sharing the ownership of core resonance inside of an organization, we ground coherence into the foundation of that organization, that company, that green company, that NGO, that social organization, because otherwise what you have is minds trying to run the show, and minds, they bring hangovers, they bring arguments with somebody, they bring all their stuff with them. And what you really want when you have an organization is you want a real clean center, because particularly in a business environment, we're massively influential, the quality of our products. And even as we become coherent as a company, we have a better quality of customer we attract. And so the point becomes, as we learn how to understand this governance and learn how to plug into it, it has a huge influence, not only in our lives, but our outpourings and our contribution. And the idea of being what I call usefully influential and exponentially so, I don't know how I came up with all this stuff. Here I am on this planet. I've been doing what I call extra innings. This whole lifetime has been, I've not done anything traditional. I didn't retire at 55 years old or 60 years old. I've retired at 30. I've been chasing what's interesting to me. And here I am, 5 books, 180 articles, 2 or 3 or 4 technologies. And it turns out it's about grounding the frequency of God into the world. Our nervous system is that center. As we quiet that nervous system, that connection becomes enabled. God peeks out the nervous system of us as groups of people, coalesces as coherence, coherence dissipates distortion. I can't fathom anything more interesting. I've already had a 40-foot sailboat. That was a lot of fun. But interacting with people and learning about grounding the frequency of God into the world, there's your excitement. There's your true excitement. That's the true fun. That's what we're here for. And letting that flow through us with no distortion.
If an audience member is intrigued by what he or she has heard this morning, or has questions, or would like to sign up for Soaring Affirmations or one of your other opportunities, how do they do so?
Well, they can go straight to the website and find the Soaring Affirmations page, which is coreresonance.com/soaringaffirmations with a hyphen. They can go to visionarieslab.com, which is actually a mini website within Core Resonance, and there's 4 or 5 pages associated with all that. Core Resonance itself. And you could also contact me through my website, coreresonance.com/contact, set up a Zoom call. I've got somebody I'm talking with tomorrow that we had to bump our call from today. Actually, it's Friday, but inquiring minds, and I'm happy to speak with anybody. In fact, I love to talk to people that have curiosity about these kinds of conversations and see how I can shed some light on their path and making a world a better place. I don't know, you know, how much money can you accumulate? How many new cars? How cool a sound system can you have after you've got all of that, maybe before? So we need to be thinking about, and some of us are naturally inclined toward this, making the world a better place. We start by walking by a bus stop and smiling at somebody and finding somebody smiles back. And that's just as helpful, but we can do it exponentially. And that's what Core Resonance and Visionaries Lab is all about.